And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Mark, we are doing it. We had a great show last week with Nika Pasquale, the co-founder of Evo Spa, a healing oasis in Mill Valley, California, and also the founder of Urban Remedy, a health program focused on detoxifying the body and the mind. And we committed, you actually came up with that, I would do that, which, yes, prompted us to do her juice fast. We're now in day 3, 4, something like that. It's a 6 times a day, 16 ounces of healthy juices. And yeah, how is it going for you, Mark? this is your first, is this your first
It's fast? My first juice cleanse. Yes. First time I've done it. Well, I started by going to the spa to pick up my juices, and I had a hydro, an aqua hydro detox where you stick it's a hydro detox where you stick your feet into this machine and they put some salt water in there and then it pulls toxins out of your feet. And so I had a nice brown soupy mess a half hour later. Yeah. And then I did an infrared sauna, which was great too. And then I started doing the juices, which are really, really taste fantastic. I was, you know, you think, well, I'm not sure. But they really, they're really refreshing and they're fulfilling as far as taking care of any type of meal, you know, desire. And it feels great.
Yeah, I've been doing it for the second time, so I kind of, my anxiety around it is way less. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying, I kind of know the phases, and I did get some headache, which is interesting. You know, I love some coffee here and there, and yes, some chocolate. But you know, day two, you can feel how your body starts to get rid of heavy metals and you detoxify a little and caffeine and whatever sits in your system. And I did have a little headache day two and just drank a little bit more water, which is allowed. But yeah, I'm looking at here.
Having a green drink that looks like...
Can you hear that? Yeah. Ground up frogs. But all...
Though it's not.
Though it's not. And yeah, I'm, you know, the green drink in the morning, you start and then there's something really spicy as the second drink addressing your liver. Mm-hmm. It's totally doable. It's delicious. And I feel great, honestly.
Yeah, I would have to say that for the last 3 days for me have been very introspective. I think that...
Which is a good thing for you.
As part of the... Yes, it's very, very well is. I just felt like I slowed down a little bit, and I've been at home, which I planned, and it's been great. It's been creating a lot of clarity for me, and the juices. I tell you what, that cashew milk cinnamon vanilla thing
at the
end of the night is absolutely scrumptious. Yes.
Yeah, and that's the beauty. I would drink all of these. Even when I wasn't on the juice fast, you know, they're just, it's really delicious. It sounds like an infomercial, but we really love it. And I sleep better. I have a hard time falling asleep usually. I sleep well usually and then could sleep in forever, but I have a hard time finding rest, you know, like getting into the sleep. I sometimes lay there for an hour. Now, you know, four days into it, I'm just within 10 minutes, I'm out. And the dreams are sweet. And so, yeah, this is really, it kind of feels like I'm recalibrating, you know, really a little bit rebalancing, recalibrating, finding my true pace rather than all the stimulants we take in. And most of them are, or many of them are food-based. So getting rid of those and not doing them for a week is already great. But then being supported by these juices, 6 times 16 ounces, and liquids too. That's more liquids than I would usually ever drink. Mm-hmm. So good thing.
Yeah.
Life is good. So yes, Nika, thank you for offering us this opportunity. And if you want to check it out, Evo Spa is in Mill Valley, California. If you are here in the Bay Area, great place to look and find out what they offer. Evo-spa.com and also Urban Remedy. I think NECA is working on having those juices be shippable all throughout the U.S., but I'm not sure where that stands exactly. Yes, Mark.
And, you know, just as I just feel blessed that I actually have that choice to do something like this. There's a lot of people who don't have the choice to, you know, decide to do a cleanse in their life because they don't even have food. And
yeah.
So I feel very blessed that at a time in my life where I can make this choice to do something better for my health and then share that experience with our listeners.
And usually those programs are geared on weight loss, and this one is not, right? I mean, it looks like you lost actually some weight, honestly. But it's important, you know, we are born with these bodies, and there's a lot we can do and a lot we cannot do. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we love who we are in whatever shape we come. And yet detoxifying is just, it's almost like a maintenance program. I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I saw an amazing quote. It says, if you don't think you have time to maintain your body now, you will need to find time to deal with sickness later on, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. So true. We can't really escape, we either do it or we don't.
And that's why being able to have food, and that's why choosing food, when we do have a choice around it, choosing good food and healthy food like produce and whole grains and things like that can make a huge difference for...
Yes, and that's a good point. You said, when you detox in that foot bath, you saw the toxins that got drawn out, and you live on a pretty healthy diet, lots of veggies. You're the produce guy. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. do I. And still, there are environmental toxins all around us all the time that... It's good to chelate out once.
And not every restaurant we go to, when we're on the road and stuff, is buying all organic food or things like that.
Yes. Yeah. It's hard to live pristinely. But we're working on that, creating that environment, both in our physical environment, in our hearts and minds. And that brings us right to this show today. So urbanremedy.com or evo-spa.com if you want to check out and consider a cleanse this spring. A great place to go to. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we're excited about our guests today, two people who in their daily work are making the connection between life and land. From programs for people without a home to programs at San Quentin State Prison, we're talking about the reach of soil. More on that when we come back right after the break. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about the reach of nature and the reach of soil. And that was John Mellencamp, who is from Indiana. And with us in the studio is Paul Glowacki, the former farm director and currently board member of the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz, California. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You yourself grew up in Indiana. Isn't that true?
It's an idea.
That's why we picked this song for you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Paul, you have been early on dedicated your life to a life of service. In your bio, it says you're a Hoosier by birth. What does that mean? And how would you introduce to seeing the importance of being of service in your lifetime?
Well, I was, I was really lucky growing up. My grandfather was a farmer, and my parents have been very committed to people and specifically to poor and people who are struggling in their lives.
What did they do?
My mom did outreach growing up, working with people who are dying and working at ARC, you know, the association for what they called it, retarded citizens at mm-hmm. the time. And my dad, you know, today, you know, he lost his job, you know, in this recession at North American Van Lines, you know, a job he had for 30 years. And the first thing that he did is he went and got a job working at a food pantry, to serve bags of food, you know. And I often said to my dad, you know, we're both running a CSA, you know, and his goal in doing that work was to feed people, to give people opportunities, and for me, the Homeless Garden Project was really a dream come true. You know, I my first experiences with homelessness, I grew up, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is a kind of Rust Belt town. And my uncle fought in the Vietnam War, and I would see him. He was a homeless man in where I was from. Here, this was my uncle, you know, family member. And I would see him, you know, when I was 16, 17, driving around downtown, you know, I would see my uncle, you know, on the side of the road. And I think that left, you know, a strong mark on
impression,
me.
Impression, sure.
And following college, you know, I spent so much time thinking about development and all of these things, and trying to give people opportunities. So I was lucky enough to be involved in AmeriCorps, and through that ended up working at a homeless shelter, and doing outreach and going and talking to people in their camps, and really just having these really interesting experiences with people. And I was very confused when I worked there. You know, I would cook a meal once a week where there was a grant, you know, where we were able to go to this store called Healthy Living, you know, that was, you know, people jokingly called it, you know, Wealthy Living, you know, where poor people
in Burlington
where
yeah,
people
I
can
know Katie.
Yeah, great store, you know, but a place again where people, you know, if you're really low income, you know, might be challenging for you to buy food there. And so what I would do is once a week I would go there and buy food, and we would go back to the day station, which was a daytime drop-in center, and with individuals. You know, and you think that the dead of winter in Burlington, Vermont, you know, it's negative degrees outside, and, you know, you can't see, you know, expose your skin, and, you know, people think, you know, why would someone want to be homeless there? You know, and we would cook these meals for folks, and it was the best time of the week, you know. And I was really
both for you, staff, and for
it was amazing. You know, we would do salsa making contests and eating organic, healthy food, all of what you guys were just talking about. You know, and it was really this wonderful experience. And I felt confused. You know, it felt like nutrition was a missing component of people's lives, and that. You know, it was impossible to have expectations of people to do good things, to follow the rules at the shelter, to have a job, to make good choices for themselves in a day-to-day life if people were starving nutritionally.
Yes, and it's such a big conversation when we look at, you know, organic cannot reach underserved communities. Well, not true, because local and organic food is what allows us, for example, with school lunch programs that Marin Organic is running, to have access to farms nearby. It's really about a local healthy food chain. The argument that you can only feed the masses if it's cheap is completely flawed if you really follow the logic, nutrition being one of the key points there, of course.
Sure, and there's lots of opportunities to feed people in an urban environment or a suburban environment. And you know, what really changed my life was, you know, meeting a man in New York City. I was at the Republican National Convention, you know, not as a delegate per se, and met a man from Chicago, and we started talking, I'm from Indiana. We started talking, and I said, well, what do you do? And he said, well, I'm a beekeeper. I said, oh, a beekeeper. And he said, yeah, I was homeless, but those guys over there, and he pointed to a group of young people about my age, and he said, they taught me how to be a beekeeper, and that's changed my life. you know, and I thought, you know, my God, you know, this is the answer, you know, and, you know, and that's why I said, you know, for me to go and work at the Homeless Garden Project, to spend my days, you know, teaching people, training people, providing opportunities for people to eat healthy food, you know, felt like so much more than just working at a homeless shelter, which was a Band-Aid approach.
Can you, for all the people who may not know about the Homeless Garden Project, can you give us like a little overview of what it is and where, sure, where it's located?
And how big is your land? And what's
So the Homeless Garden Project's pretty remarkable. You know, it was started 21 years ago in Santa Cruz, on the west side of Santa Cruz. And it was born, you know, out of this time, you know, following the 80s, you know, where there was a need for homeless services, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the homeless shelter.
What do you mean by that? That was
a
need?
Well, you know, there's, you know, people, you know, wonder about homelessness and why it happens and why there would even be a need for the Homeless Garden Project, you know, but, and there's both policy and personal things happening simultaneously to create a fairly precarious situation for people.
So what changed in the 80s for that?
Well, regarding policy, you know, we followed the Vietnam War. There was, you know, the cost of living has increased. Development changed and people's wages, you know, didn't necessarily mesh up. Mm-hmm. Along with that, there was a change in the way that mental health services were being run and allocated, and just a real markedly change. And so, you know, what happened, what I tell people is that homelessness is really, you know, I'm 32 years old. Homelessness is a product of my generation, you know, where we see it today, you know, where, you know, and I don't know what the latest statistics, you know, today are, but I can tell you that there's at least 3 million homeless people in the States, 1 million of which are kids.
Are you saying it didn't exist before the 80s?
Not to the extent that we see it today. You know, there have always been people riding on the rails, people on the periphery of society, people, you know, but to the point where 1 million children grow up homeless, that is a change. You know, that's something that's changed. And what was interesting is that the homeless shelter in Burlington, Vermont, and in Santa Cruz started almost the exact same time. On two opposite ends of the country, there was this need for homeless services. And so the Homeless Garden Project was really started, you know, out of that need.
Who started it, and where did you start?
So originally, you know, the idea came from a really incredible man named Paul Lee, Dr. Paul Lee, who he had worked on helping to start the first homeless shelter in Santa Cruz, and is a real visionary, you know, creative thinker, you know, a real mover and a shaker. And he had, you know, this idea of, you know, running a garden with homeless individuals. And, you know, I think it, you know, it took just a donation of plants, of herb plants, and you know, for him to say, well, you know, now's the perfect time to start this. And so he found a woman to help him start the garden. And this was on the west side of Santa Cruz, over, you know, by Lighthouse Beach, and it was right on the coast. And he allocated the land, but it was, you know, before there was ever a guerrilla gardening. You know, that's what they did essentially, is they planted these plants out. And these plants were going to be for homeless individuals and to be run by homeless folks. And, you know, how it started is so much different than what it's morphed into in that, you know, now it's a training program where we're paying people. It's you know, thousands of individuals are coming out to the farm each year to be a part of what we're doing. But the training program, on, you know, about 3 acres of land, what we are now today, is the focus, the primary focus of our work.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are speaking with Paul Glowacki, the former farm director of the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz, and now a board member of the Homeless Garden Project. And we want to dive more into the services that are provided there, when we come back right after the break.
I used to ride with a vending machine repairman.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about the reach of nature and soil. With us in the studio is Paul Glowacki, the former farm director and current board member of the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz.
Paul, homelessness and joblessness go hand in hand. How does your integrated approach address all of these needs?
Well, the Homeless Garden Project, you know, what was unique about it initially was that because it was a farm, and what we're talking about is a 3-acre market farm that, you know, is in the French intensive tradition. So we're intensive planting of plants, and you know, the farm was supposed to be a safe place for people. And more often than not, what we saw when people were coming to us is that, you know, their dignity and their self-esteem had somehow been washed away through the experiences Sure. of homelessness. And so what we offered people, and what we offer people daily, is the opportunity to not just come and work and to be a part of something, but to be part of a job training program. Mm-hmm. And so each year we hire anywhere from 15 to 20 low-income and homeless individuals, people that are experiencing real barriers to employment. And we hire them to be a part of our training program. And the training program's 20 hours a week, and it's very regimented, meaning that we have a circle meeting at the beginning of the week, where it's a community-type meeting. On Wednesdays, we have classes. On Thursdays, we harvest flowers for our CSA, and on Friday, we harvest vegetables for our CSA. And so it's a very regimented-type program. That's the life of a farmer. And so we ask people to work at a very high level and have high expectations of them. And as I said, all of the food then in turn goes to feeding ourselves at the farm, feeding low-income individuals in Santa Cruz, and then also feeding our members of our CSA.
And so CSA, just for people to clarify, community-supported agriculture, it's the box program, right? People can sign up to a box from your farm, from the Homeless Garden Project, and once a week or so, individuals get a box of produce?
Yeah, we actually have two types where people can come and pick their own vegetables.
Oh, wonderful.
A UPIC CSA where people can come and be a part of the farm and really see where their food comes from. And then also, you know, that type of service where we bring it to a location.
Sure. So rather than a CSA, it's actually an ASC, right? Agriculture Supporting Community.
And maybe we should have called it that. You know, yes. It was the first CSA in Santa Cruz.
Oh.
And one of the first few in the state.
Congratulations.
You know, and I think about what CSAs have become.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that ours has stuck around for such a long time. It's
truly
really exciting.
Both ways. Yes. Yeah. So you pay them. It's a 3-acre working farm. It's a job training program. You train them not just the job skills, but you also give them dignity back. And these are paid individuals, right? They work 20 hours a week.
Sure. People get paid between $8 and $10 an hour. And they're working anywhere from 20 to 30 hours a week, depending on what role and their seniority and things like that.
While they're learning a skill.
While they're learning skills. And, you know, that's really important because, you know, we're not asking people to just volunteer, which is almost an impossible situation to ask someone who's homeless to volunteer somewhere. Even though we all know the real benefits of working on the land and working with plants and to start a seed and to see it go into someone else's mouth, or your mouth, what a remarkable transformative experience that can be for someone. To just ask someone who's homeless to volunteer and do that is almost impossible considering the environment that we're in today.
Well, and we do want to, any exchange has to be reciprocal. And if somebody works, I'm not, I'm not speaking against volunteerism.
Sure.
But for, you know, often that exchange, witnessing that exchange is a great value and is a great gift for somebody who does not need to get paid. But I do think it's important in this society, especially here in the States, where many things are kind of identified by money, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's what is right now. To honor homeless people for their work in a way that actually earns them, you know, a salary in a way, or
sure,
maybe
and it's a stipend, you know, it's
exactly.
Yeah, it's more because it's not going to get anyone,
sure,
you know, on their feet. And what we're asking is that when people are outside of the program, you know, it's 20 hours a week that they're doing other things to help move themselves forward. Mm-hmm. And it's a real holistic, you know, the training program is a real holistic approach where we're both teaching people concrete skills, but we're also meeting with them on a very personal level.
And it's empowering. I mean, you know, money, they can buy food with that themselves. They can, you know, maybe find a different.
Sure. I mean, we all know how good it feels to get a paycheck.
Yes.
I mean, it's.
And, you know, just real quick, you know, Maslow in the hierarchy of needs, he talks about that if, you know, people talk about creating goals for yourself and creating utopia in your life or creating this great place in your life. And he says that you can't even begin to start thinking about that if, in fact, you're not sleeping or you're not eating or you can't take care of your basic needs.
Sure.
Because your thoughts are around just taking care of your basic needs.
Yeah.
And so this helps by giving people a step up. It allows them to go past some of those basic needs.
Sure.
Yes. With us in the studio, Paul Glowacki, former farm director of the Homeless Garden Project and now a board member, homelessgardenproject.org, for more information. Paul, stay with us. We are now inviting Beth, who is calling us from Marin County, I believe. Beth Waitkus is the founder of the Inside Garden Program at San Quentin State Prison. Beth, are you with us?
Yes, good morning, Helga. How are you?
Thanks for calling in today. And I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on board. I wish I could have some other gentlemen from my program join us, but alas, they're in prison.
Yes. So you and I got in touch a couple months ago. You invited me to come and speak to your class, and it really stirred my interest in your work. Today we're talking about the reach of soil far beyond food production, but mm-hmm. really as a tool and as an opportunity to reintegrate every part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Glowacki here from the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz is with us in the studio, and we thought it's a perfect opportunity to talk about your program. So
Thank you. You
founded the Inside Garden Program at San Quentin State Prison. Tell us about it. What spurred you to do that, and what is the program? What does it offer?
Sure. Well, I began the Insight Garden program under another organization called the Insight Prison Project back in 2002. And actually, my interest in doing, coming back to doing community work was inspired by the tragic events of 9/11 and kind of made a huge life shift after that and decided that I wanted to start giving back to the community. And through a series of very synchronistic events, I just ended up wanting to volunteer my time at prison. And I ended up meeting...
What were those events? Can you share them?
Oh, sure. I was going through a bit of a career change. I'd worked in corporate America for quite a few years. It wasn't very satisfying to me personally, and I felt like I really wanted to do something meaningful. And the events included some career counseling. I met a gentleman who also went to the same career counselor that I did, who was he was a staff psychiatrist at San Quentin at the time and then the community partnerships manager. Mm. And he brought me into the prison, and it felt very... because I had worked for the Job Corps program many years before, it felt very comfortable to me. It felt very much like a place that I could maybe do some good. So at the time, I was also starting a graduate degree in organization development, and that's around creating change and transitions and resistant systems. So building a garden in a prison, believe it or not, took yes. a lot of time and effort.
So what have you created? What is the program, and what were the greatest obstacles maybe to get there? Because, yes, it's not easy, maybe even one of the most difficult places to create such a program.
Yeah, the major obstacle in the beginning was simply, you know, in prison things are very regulated, and it's around safety and movement, and things are very confined to what they think will help promote safety and movement. And to build a garden on a prison yard, the major concern was, you know, other than plants, what else could the men plant there? Because the garden was spec'd to be on a prison yard, open to all 1,000 inmates who use the unit. So the fear was mostly about weapons and that kind of thing, what the garden might be used for aside from gardening. And you know, through a process of really developing close relationships and close collaborations with the prison staff, the officers, security, we really, and also research on the impact of gardening on people, they really came to be comfortable with the idea. And we also had a warden at the time who was very progressive and was very into rehabilitation programs. So after about a year and a half of planning, we actually were able to build a garden, a beautiful organic flower and herb garden on a prison yard.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helbert.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us on the phone is Beth Waitkus, the founder of the Insight Garden Program at San Quentin State Prison.
So, Beth, I was wondering, when I was looking at your bio and looking into your program on the website, you talk about reconnecting men to themselves through your organic gardening program. Can you mm-hmm. tell us how this works?
Sure. That's our program model, and our mission is to reconnect people to themselves, their communities, and the natural environment by actually working in nature. As we all know, we came from nature. We a long time ago, we were hunters and gatherers, and part of our society has become very disconnected. A lot of our society has become very disconnected from the natural world. And the idea being, with a lot of research backing it, that when we get back into nature and work with it and are close to it and begin to understand it more, we also reconnect to ourselves and our greater inner being, our hearts, our souls. And that indeed, that connection is indeed made for these men in the garden. Basically through the project, we do what we have a very integrated curriculum. It includes the outer gardener curriculum, which is about teaching inmates vocational landscaping and gardening skills. We have what we call the inner gardener, which is using gardening to help men foster behavioral transformation. We have a curriculum module around human eco connections, and then also food farming and urban agriculture and green jobs training.
So Beth, how does that work when you say curriculum? They learn, is there a classroom setting, and then they take what they learn in the classroom back onto the garden? And
yes.
How do you integrate the actual physical planting of herbs and flowers to the curriculum?
Right. We have we do have inside classes that we hold on a regular basis, and we also split that up with either time in the garden, or we have, you know, full days we're in the garden, and if the weather's not great, we'll have full days in the classroom. And then we help facilitate a process of them understanding those connections between themselves and the garden and what happens in the garden and the larger ecological aspects of their place in the natural world as human beings. I mean, we are all part of the ecological system, and we tend to feel, I think there's a separation of that currently.
Mm-hmm. So
we're trying to bring that back.
Well, and which is fantastic. And can you tell us how your program has affected some of the prisoners that you're working with?
Sure, I'd love to, because that's really the
essence. Yeah, that's why you're doing it. Yes.
We're so, you know, here's an example. You know, there's a gentleness that comes out in people when they reconnect to nature. And an example of that is a Native American man in our class who's since paroled, and doing very well, by the way, learned to pet the bees. He learned, he would go around the garden and find bumblebees, and he would pet them. He would literally stroke their backs. And he taught other men to do that. And underneath, you know, all of his stuff, there is this incredible gentleness and kindness. And that's just one example. We see them, especially people from urban areas, we see this very rapid transformation of being kind of shut down and closed to really opening up. Their energy changes, the way they function in the class changes. They become much more connected as a community, and they start to smile and open up about deeper issues. So the garden really brings out, I think, the best in people.
And so it's not necessarily a job skill program, right? You're not aiming for the inmates, once they're on parole and released, to become farmers or gardeners.
It's actually both. So the inner gardener part is the personal transformation. The outer gardener is the skills development. So we are actually teaching them as well basic gardening and landscaping skills, you know, how to prune roses, how to deal with soil amendment. We just, for instance, last week we had a organic fertilizer class where we brought in an expert on organic fertilizing, and we spread organic fertilizers on the yard so they could learn about them and the different chemical properties of organic fertilizer. So, like I say, it's a very integrated, holistic curriculum that covers a lot of ground. And the men we have in the program generally stay with us for as long as they're in prison. It's important to note that everybody we work with will parole, and the idea is to send them out back out into society in better shape than they came into prison, and with many more skill sets that can be utilized when they leave.
Mm-hmm. And what type of things are you growing?
Well, we have some beautiful, we have some lots of scented things. So we have geranium, what is it, the scented geraniums. We have lots of roses. We have asclepias, which we hope to bring in monarch butterflies with. We have rosemary and lavender and beautiful, beautiful flowers. Actually, we've had many donations from many different places. We even have hollyhock that was donated to us. The seeds were donated to us from Monet's garden in Giverny, France.
Wow. Beth Waitkus, the founder of the Inside Garden Program at St. Quentin in Marin County, north of San Francisco. Beth, what do you do with the products once they're grown, with the plants, with the flowers? Where do they go?
The flowers stay. It's not a massive garden. It's about 1,200 square feet in the corner of a prison, a very gray and bleak prison yard. And to date, like I said, the garden is open to all inmates on the yard. So there's a path through it. They can walk through it. They often use it for meditation. Men sit around and play their guitars. There's music in the area. It's the only place on the prison yard. It's important to note that it is the only place on the yard that all the races
mingle.
Intermingle.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas on the rest of the yard, they kind of self-segregate. So that was a huge finding in some research we did. We don't have enough to sell or give away, but we are hoping to grow a vegetable garden. We've been working on one for 3 years, and when that is, we go through final approvals on that, we will actually donate the food to charities and the families of people in prison.
Yes, and non-segregation is the natural flow of nature.
Absolutely.
So no, not much surprise there. Beth, if people wanted to get involved or support you, how mm-hmm. could they do that?
Well, they can check us out on the web at insightgardenprogram.org. We have a Facebook friends page, which is Insight. It's just the Insight Garden Program. And then I also have a blog called The Avant Gardener. And we welcome, and people are welcome to call me as well. My information is on the website. So we certainly welcome community support, and you know, obviously we survive on the kindness of foundations and individuals to support us financially.
Yes, insightgardenprogram.org. Can people make contributions there as well?
Absolutely. If people go to our website, we have there's a button that people can click on and make donations to right away.
And Beth, I just want to give kudos to your blog. I read through it yesterday, and if you ever need another career as a writer, you certainly have a way of bringing the reader right into your world, into in a very comfortable place. And so
I would definitely recommend. There's a book coming out of this too, actually, that I've still in the process of writing the proposal for, but it's called Hearts Behind Bars, Stories from a Prison Garden.
Good for you. We'll look forward to seeing that and having you on when your book comes out.
Great. Thank you so much.
And we'll come out and speak if we get the honor.
We would love to have you anytime.
Yes. Beth Waitkus, the founder of the Insight Garden Program at San Quentin State Prison, insightgardenprogram.org, the website. Check it out. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio still is Paul Glowacki from the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz, and we'll dive in how that program has transformed people, homeless people that are part of the program in Santa Cruz and beyond. Stay tuned.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio is Paul Glowacki, former farm director and current board member of the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz, as we are talking about the reach of soil.
So, Paul, you know, Beth was just talking about how the garden was a place where everybody came together, didn't matter who you were or your race or your religion. Everybody came together in this one place. Do you find the same thing at the Homeless Garden Project?
You know, I often say that my favorite thing about the Garden Project is that on any given day, you have the richest to the poorest in Santa Cruz working together. We all eat together every single day. And on the best of best days, the homeless individuals are teaching housed folks how to grow their own food. Mm. You know, I think what a special place in this world, and how, frankly, you know, the garden just brings understanding, and labels and you know, slough off the second you step off on the road into the garden, and you just become a person. And we spend very little time thinking about labels on the farm, and we've tried to break those down to the point that we're all just people working together. Mm-hmm. And that really is my favorite thing.
So founded 21 years ago, now really an established oasis of hope and possibility in Santa Cruz. You are paying up to, what, 20, 30 people, individuals?
20 individuals.
20 individuals. And it's a 6 months. What's the engagement? How long will
currently
they stay?
The program's 3 years long. You know, we've discussed...
Wow.
You know, shortening that time period to allow to work with more individuals while not compromising the
stability,
you know, the stability of them, and also the you know, and the integrity of the program.
Sure.
and the training that we're giving folks. That being said, you know, over 500 individuals have been a part of the training program since it started, you know, 20 plus years ago. And when folks come to us, you know, they're coming from, you know, all different types of, you know, reasons and causes.
Sure.
and they all come to us, but people are coming there to learn, and because they personally want to make a change.
Yeah. And I would assume that their trust in society is, you know, as disturbed as our trust in them often. So it will take time to heal that, to rebuild that trust. So, you know, yes, it's a great notion to have more people go through maybe a 2-year program, but I can see how a true reintegration takes the
challenge,
space and
you
the
know,
time.
We don't do good with change at the Homeless Garden Project. We
yes.
we like when people
most
come
people don't
and
do
and learn and are a part of what we're doing, and you know, we see them, you know, we see their daily triumphs, and we hear about their personal
it's
triumphs.
A universal thing.
Okay,
though, yeah.
Great. You know, so we love that, but we also, you know, understand that you know, a success is when someone does go on and find meaningful work or a place to live and things of this nature.
So what have you seen, if since we are on it? And we just heard from Beth Waitkus, the founder of the Inside Garden Program at St. Quentin State Prison. She was sharing this story about a Native American who's now on parole and might be listening to us. And he learned... how to pet the bees, how to touch the backs of the bees, and then taught other inmates, and it brought out the most gentle side that he had. What have you seen in all your work, both as a farm director and now board member, really still being actively involved in the Homeless Garden Project every day?
It's interesting that you brought up the use of animals, because that is, you know, there really is something about the care of animals that brings out a side in people that is truly a wonderful aspect. But, you know, I think on the the day to day, you would see people, you know, when they were out working with the ducks, you know, we have a flock of, you know, 8 or 10 ducks, you know, that, you know, have become so much more, you know, they're supposed to be quote unquote livestock, but they became, you know, they became this, I mean, they were really, it was like pet therapy for us. And, you know, there was a time a couple years ago when we lost one of the ducks, Desdemona, you know.
That was her name.
That was her name, Desdemona.
And, shout out to Desdemona. Thanks for all your work.
Khaki Campbell, truly a wonderful animal. And you know, we had, you know.
And she died of natural causes.
She died of natural causes, yeah. Of course. But, you know, we had a service for her. And, you know, people, it was a time, what it felt like was it was a time when people, you can learn about, what the garden is a place where you can learn about so many things in such a, just a safe environment. And that's what we try to create, is a place that's safe for people to come and learn things about themselves on a day to day and, you know, learn things about each other. You know, and I really love the idea that Beth was presenting of these hardened men out working with flowers. You know, and these guys, you know, it just breaks down.
Do you have a specific scene that you remember that really moved you? Like what a story you can share of how observing an interaction or, you know, somebody you had worked with who had certain beliefs that really transformed by working with the garden, with the plants or with the ducks?
Well, this past year, a woman named Susie passed away who had worked with us for 4 years. And what really felt like a tragedy at the time, you know, something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And when I first started working with Susie, she dealt with some demons like many people do, but hers primarily were alcohol and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And Susie, in working with us, she was a horticultural genius. You know, she knew so much about plants and landscaping and gardening and but she just truly did not believe in herself. When I left the garden, she wasn't just a trainee anymore. She had become, you know, she was our propagation manager. She ran the greenhouses. She worked with the volunteers, the interns, all of these people on a day to day basis, and she totally had broken down all of these, you know, these barriers that she had to work with people, where she wasn't scared to be herself, and when she passed away, you know, she truly was helping to run the farm, you know. And I think about how lucky she was to have found something that she truly, truly loved. And this wasn't just a moment. This was, you know, every night I would see her out working till sunset, putting seeds into a tray, you know, making sure that the, you know, she just believed in the farm so much, and she loved it, that it was, you know, I really was honored to be able to work with her and to see that happen to her.
Beautiful.
So, can you tell us how people can support the program?
Sure. There's lots of ways to help us out. Of course, Helga talked about, you know, checking out the homelessgardenproject.org, mm-hmm. You know, and we are on Facebook and things of this nature. But, you know, of course, like any nonprofit, you know, we, you know, accept donations, and people can you know, we have a holiday drive and things of this nature. You know, what I would ask is if anyone who's in a foundation, who's interested in, who works with a foundation, who's interested in food justice and green jobs and these things that are important, to please contact us. We also have something that's really interesting. You know, within our CSA, we started our scholarship shares.
Or ASC.
ASC.
The box program.
I got to totally flip my whole world here, Helga. But the scholarship shares are a way that people can donate to the project. And for every, you know, say $600 that we raise, what's one share, We donate a share to the Santa Cruz AIDS projects and these low income
individuals. What does it mean, a share?
A box? Share, one box a week. Mm-hmm. And then the flowers go to Hospice of Santa Cruz. So by supporting the scholarship CSA, you're not only helping to employ and train low-income and homeless individuals, yes. You're also helping to feed people who truly need nutrition to make good decisions in their lives. And so I really think that's a wonderful way that anyone can support. And then we have, you know, if you're local or in the area, we always welcome people to the farm. We have volunteer days on Thursdays and Fridays from 10 to 2. And, you know, what I would say is that if you're somewhere in the country and you have an interest in the Homeless Garden Project and the idea of the training program, you know, we're always there to discuss what we do, how we do it, and ways that maybe could improve. You know, we really see ourselves as a model and want people to come to learn. I think about an organization here in San Francisco called Growing Home that came to learn from us, and they've started this really wonderful thing. So that helps us when people take this to where they're from.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio, Paul Glowacki, the former farm director and current board member of the Homeless Garden Project in Santa Cruz, California. Paul, you have many programs featured on your website, the Women's Organic Flower Enterprise, which has been a great success. When I was working for a certifier in Santa Cruz, I think it was started that time around 8 or 9 years, 10 years ago.
Right.
Is that right? And as you said, the beauty of the program is beyond reintegration to society and practical job skills, but also you are creating a product, in this case, bouquets of flowers. How can people get, do you ship those? Where can people buy?
Sure, and for us, that goal, the product, is a very important piece, yes, of what we're doing. And the flowers, we both sell, you know, fresh flowers locally and do weddings and things of this nature. And people who are interested in socially just and local and organic flowers can, yes, contact us for their wedding flowers.
What a great idea!
But we also dry flowers throughout the season, flowers and herbs together. And we call it the Women's Organic Flower Enterprise. And when it was started, it truly was that. It was a space to be a safe space for women. But you know, as we were discussing earlier, you know, what we've tried to do over the years, while we still have the labels, we tried to break down these labels within the farm. And where women and men are working together, harvesting flowers, we dry them. And then in the fall time, we take them down to our store and everyone goes down to the shop and we make wreaths and herb salts and salves and beeswax candles and all of these really wonderful types of kitschy, beautiful art that people just absolutely love. And then we sell it downtown on Pacific Avenue during the holiday season, and we sell it online. And that's a great way for people to support us.
And that's really great. And you won't change the name, right? So the Women's Organic Flower Enterprise, as one of the programs of the Homeless Garden Project, does include men.
To be sure.
That's
to
the
be
best.
Sure. Yeah. You had to,
yes,
you know, because, you know, we really wanted, you know, there's a lot of therapy that comes from working with flowers. And yeah.
Yes. And it's about not just commingling, but really acknowledging the natural flow of nature where no separation exists. That was this week's An Organic Conversation. Paul, thank you so much for all your work. Great to have you in the studio. Paul Glowacki, farm director. Former farm director and current board member of the Homeless Garden Project. That website again is homelessgardenproject.org. And earlier on the phone with us, Beth Waitkus, the founder of the Insight Garden Program at St. Quentin State Prison in Marin County. Two amazing programs. Thanks for being part of
it. Thank you so much. We're honored.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer Gina Island Girl Rustani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. And we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
Coming up next is Beth Greer and Your Supernatural Life. Great show. right after this show, so stay tuned. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then, and thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.